everybody, and welcome once again to another edition of Otherwear. And this week we've got not one, but two very special guests. We don't have very much time because we have so much to talk about, so I'm going to get straight into the show. If you've never listened to the show before, welcome. It's wonderful to have you along. This is a show that is dedicated to the exploration of multidimensionality, and in particular, what we can do to enhance our inner spiritual technologies. And these include all of our psychic faculties, including telepathy, which is a subject that we are going to be dwelling on quite a lot this evening as we talk to animal communicator Colleen Nicholson. Colleen has been a homeopath since 1987, and she also owns a homeopathic veterinary practice. She's one of the world's most respected animal communicators, and she's written a book called Crossing the Rainbow Bridge, which I think is a must for any animal lover, especially if you are someone who has loved and lost a companion animal, and I think most of us fall into that category. Do animals have a soul? Do they go to heaven? And do we get to see them again when we cross over? Colleen Nicholson has developed an amazing ability to telepathically communicate to animals, both here and on the other side, and her book contains profound messages from 38 of her animal clients that answer all these questions and more. And once you hear Colleen share some of these messages with us on the show, I think your perspective on animals will probably never be the same again. I think you'll love your animals even more, and may even pick up a tip or two on how you can develop your own abilities to communicate more easily with the animals in your life. We'll also share some remarkable information that I think all cat lovers must hear, and it came through when I communicated with my cat, Eartha, last week through Colleen. It's mind-blowing stuff, and I think this interview will be unlike any other program on animals you have ever heard before. But before we do that, I'd like to introduce you to my friend Joelle, and she's been planning something huge. It's happening right now, and she will be telling you all about it in just a moment.
Online.
If you're someone who has participated before during global prayers, then you'll probably know that even if you're on your own physically, you can establish a very deep connection to all beings all around the planet during these times. And so this is a very special full moon. It coincides with the Festival of Humanity, the Ray of Willpower, and it's basically the third month in a triad of full moons that has focused firstly with Easter on the heart and the Festival of Christ. Then during Vesak, last full moon, we got in touch with the energies of the Buddha and our minds. And now it's really up to us to pull it all together and create a foundation for us to work from for the rest of the year. So during this announcement with Joelle, you'll be able to find out about all of the details about the gathering that's happening this weekend at Wildcat Mountain. And it's my great pleasure to welcome to the airwaves Joelle, who is located in Vernon County in Wisconsin in the United States. She's going to be telling us all about a big celebration that's on this weekend. It's called the Wildcat Wheel. So, Joelle, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for being here, and I can't wait to find out all about what's happening this weekend.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
Thank you. Now, let's talk firstly about the name Wildcat Wheel. What is that all about?
Well, it started off, it's been lifetimes in the making, I think. It started off with people realizing, being moved into this area who didn't know anything about this area. And it turns out that there is an unglaciated area where the earth here is very ancient, and there's more biodiversity per square inch than anywhere else on the planet. It's got some very old soil that has never been washed away. And the terrain is set up so that there are coulees and ridges, which means that there are poles where this energy gathers, you know, lines of energy where this gathers and the earth gathers, and they haven't been able to use machines on it. There's very little electricity here, and it's at the accumulation point right on the line of the New Madrid Fault of these hills that live around here.
My goodness. So the purpose of creating a wheel there, or a medicine wheel as it's known in indigenous cultures, is to do what?
Is to realize that through the 12 spokes we are all in fact differentiated in so many different ways, yet all of life comes from one source. The top of the mountain, Wildcat Mountain, is empty, and we acknowledge that we come from one source.
Are you attempting to do some kind of, you know, etheric acupuncture on the Earth's grid there? Because you mentioned it's on the Madrid Fault, so I guess that must be an accumulation of a certain amount of negative energy as well. It's traveling along that fault.
That accumulates, right? Yes. Yes, there's both. There's both, and there's some, you know, the spirit of the people that have lived on the face of the Earth remains on the face of the Earth at that, in that area, and in particular with a terrain like this one. Anyway, the idea is that through our prayers of gratitude for all of life and acknowledging that we are all in fact interdependent on one another and that there's a fullness and richness in life, that we can heal all our relations. In the Native American sense, all our relations means all of our relationships to everything.
And you're going to have people participating from all around the world, aren't you?
That's correct. That's correct. We have people in Vancouver at a medicine wheel there at a place called Cor Unum, who are going to be gathering, somebody who's going to be fasting to the four directions for 4 days during that time.
Wow.
In Los Angeles, we have groups gathering as well. In New Zealand, in Australia, in Singapore, in China, in India, we have people meditating in ashrams. We don't have anything per se from Africa, but I brought some sand from Africa, which we're distributing to the 12 points to represent this journey, because I wasn't able to physically go there. Little bit by little bit, it's come together. It's been, then there are people in Newfoundland who have been amazing, who did a dove ceremony there for opening the wing of the dove. It turns out that, and of course, this, I entered into this very innocently, but I was certainly pushed in an amazing direction. This has helped me to grow so much this year. This dove image on the, superimposed on the North American continent, I don't know if you're familiar with it at all. Okay. Well, it seems that one of the wings was broken. Somebody told me along the way when I was in Australia that one of the wings was broken, and I thought, well, what could they possibly be talking about? And as I traveled around, I came to realize that we had a major wound right there in New York City just a few years ago, and that was a very modern wound, very contemporary, and one that was had created a lot of fear and hatred and distrust, and all these things had come out of it. And could something good come out of it now? Can we heal it now? So we've done a special ceremony on Ground Zero there, and taken a little piece of Wildcat Mountain there. And then there are people who are going to be doing Kriya Yoga meditations in New York.
And the wheel, we should quickly explain to people who have never seen a medicine wheel before. It's actually laid out on the ground. And what's it constructed of?
Well, this one, we've placed crystals down. We've placed some flagstone, because that's comes from the blessed direction of this wheel, where the blessings come from. So we've put some flagstone down, and crystals that were powered, actually, we sent them down to Georgia, and they were powered for a couple of months.
Can I just ask you quickly why they were taken to Georgia in particular to be charged?
Just because we happen to have some really powerful crystal working people down there. They do a lot of prayer. There's a place called Black Mountain, and they very, very sacred, holy place, too. There are many places all over the earth that are just beautiful.
Tell us about the 12 different sectors, the spokes in the wheel.
The wheel has 12 different sectors. Each one has a leader, and it's usually a partnership between a person who has a location and a person who was primarily interested in the wheel in a more ceremonial way. So we start off with these 12 partnerships there, and then each person develops their team, whoever wants to come to that spoke, and just out of the natural bubbliness of life, people gravitate to where there's more resonance for them. So all of the spokes are very different, but everybody seems quite at home where they are. Now we're going to start off on the Friday night with a sweat for all the spokes leaders and the people who are involved in this whole wheel in the center. We're going to be doing a sweat lodge ceremony for purification. And what that does, because I used to work with the Aura Star, I don't know if you're familiar with it, but what it does to the life force is it totally makes your life force white and very angelic and pure, just like the angels. That's what the purification through the sweat lodge does. On the Saturday morning, we're going to have sunrise, the drum beat starts, and various ceremonies and dances and things like that going on throughout the day. And then a ceremony in the evening as the moon rises, because that'll be the dove moon flying.
Tell us a little bit about that moon, because there's a very special significance to it this month, isn't there?
Yes, well, the Native Americans call it the dove moon. That's exactly where it came from. It's the traditional name for the dove moon. And this year it's particularly interesting because we have the moon's alignment with the galactic center and the planet Pluto at the time of our gathering. At the end, when we finish the Sunday morning, actually, the Sunday morning, there's going to be a special service honoring all young life. And that's young plants, young children, young whatever, and there will be some tree planting in the different spokes going on, and then they'll close up after lunch, and then we're having a gathering in the center on the Sunday evening where everybody's coming together. We will have a candlelight ceremony.
I was going to mention earlier about the connection between the center of the circle, which, you know, represents infinite source,
uh-huh,
and the alignment this month with the galactic center, and how, you know,
that represents our source,
yes,
our limited source. Obviously, we know there are other galaxies,
yes,
too, and there are even greater sources than that, but for our immediate purposes, that's certainly a large enough,
yes,
thing to look at.
Now, if people would like to, you know, contribute in some way, but they're not in America and they can't make it to Wildcat Wheel Mountain, or
just
to Wildcat Mountain.
Have one right where you are.
So what can people do?
So people can have a fire, they can light a candle, they can gather with friends, they can be alone, whatever it is that helps them to realize how grateful they are about life and how wonderful it is to be alive, to be part of this river of life that we all belong to, as innocently as the birds outside. It's just that beautiful and that magnificent.
There was one other thing I wanted to ask. It was about the degrees in the spokes of the wheel. There are 22 degrees.
So this is... Yes, let me explain. In the beginning, when Carol said Wildcat Mountain, I said all these people moved here, and then all of a sudden here we were with this dream, and it just came together. So I took a map and a piece of plexiglass, and I drew a circle around it and looked for rivers and mounds in the area, which are considered like sacred sites. And I just marked those. That was what I did intuitively. And then we took some rocks from the area and sent them to a man called Peter Champeau, who wrote Gaia Matrix, and who is very much involved in sacred geometry. And he says that the rocks break at the same angles as the large rocks. And they were, and the rocks that we sent were all broken at 30-degree angles. So that was the division for the wheel. And as it turned out, the division for the wheel of the rocks was the same as the one that intuitively I picked up on when I did the rivers and mounds.
Well, that certainly must have been a big sign to help you know that you were on the right path.
It did. It did. It told me that this was absolutely going to happen. And it's been an absolutely incredible miracle.
Can you describe the process of how, from having the dream, you've now attracted all of the assistance that you've needed to attract to make this a reality?
Well, I just kept invoking all those unseen presences.
Has it surprised you at how much assistance you've had?
Oh, I've just been carried on the wings of angels. I really, it's an amazing gift, this.
Good on you for making this something that everybody in the world can participate in.
And well, this is for everybody. This is for our life, regardless of what church or synagogue or tree they sit under. It doesn't matter. This is for all of life, and it's an incredible blessing for everybody. And from what I hear, Celia Fenn wrote a very nice article on the effects of the full moon just recently. It's going to be just wonderful. I'm looking forward to it.
Well, have an absolutely wonderful time, and thank you again for being on the show. Best of
luck. Thank you, Liz. I hope you get the tape on time.
Oh, I will. It won't be a problem.
Okay.
Okay, take good care, Joelle.
Blessings on you. Thank you for calling.
Blessings.
Welcome back to the show. When I talk about our inner spiritual technologies, one of those technologies is our ability to be telepathic. This is, I believe, built in, and we can develop it. The more we use it, the better it gets. And we've all developed our telepathy and other psychic abilities to one degree or another. Everyone has had the experience of knowing who was on the phone before they picked it up, or having thoughts about someone and then a couple of days later bumping into them in the street. So I have asked animal communicator Colleen Nicholson to appear on the show to share some of her secrets in animal communication with us, as well as share some of the beautiful messages that she has received from the animals themselves. Colleen is able not only to pick up their thoughts when they're alive, she has the rare ability to tune into them after they have crossed over to the other side, and her book, Crossing the Rainbow Bridge, is a remarkable collection of some of these messages. She writes, somewhere just this side of heaven, at a place called Rainbow Bridge, questions about whether animals have souls, whether they do go to heaven, and whether we get to see them again, have been answered by an unlikely lot of memorable characters, such as pigs, dogs, cats, horses and goats, and many others. You'll hear them share in their own words their unique insights on life and death and what crossing the Rainbow Bridge means, not only to them, but to their human survivors. Issues they have faced and speak out about include abuse, accidental death, euthanasia, illness and reincarnation. And I'm even going to ask her what the edible animals have to say too.
BBS Radio.com. Our next guest is somebody that I've been looking forward to speaking to for a very, very long time. And although I only met her recently in person, I feel as though she's been a friend to me for quite a number of years, because a few years ago I heard her being interviewed on another radio station with another radio host, and quite frankly, after hearing the interview with Colleen Nicholson, I had my opinion, my perspective, my whole outlook on animals, animal intelligence, and animal communication changed forever. So I'd like to welcome her now to bbsradio.com and to the airwaves of Otherwhere. Colleen Nicholson, thank you so much for appearing on the show, and welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Liz, and for that really nice introduction.
Well, it's not only nice, it's very, very true. It does feel like that because, you know, when I listened to your interview on Mysteries of the Mind, Alex asked you some great questions, and one of the things that he made sure he did was ask you how to communicate with animals, how hard was it for you to learn how to do it, and he also got you to share a few tips, which I then took away and used with my pets, and, you know, it's been incredible. It's opened up a whole new dimension to our relationship. I don't think I'm nearly as good as you, but it's just been amazing, and that's something that I'd like you to do while you're here with us, of course, is to share some of those tips with our listeners. But first of all, I'd love to find out how you did become an animal communicator in the first place.
I became an animal communicator quite by accident. We had brought home our very first potbelly pig named Clover 15 years ago, and instantly things started happening, and I didn't recognize them for what they were at the time. I thought I had a great imagination. Basically, I would walk through the house, and he would be in his little area getting used to us and us used to him, and I would, you know, I would talk to him. I would ask him a question or something, and instantly a reply would come out of my mouth. And because people have so much on their mind at a time, we really don't stop to think about what runs through our mind on a daily basis. And so I never stopped to think that that was rather odd, that I would answer for the pig. And as time went by, you know, the months went by, this just kept happening. And I realized that the things that were coming out were very funny. They were worded in ways that I would never word anything or think to word a phrase that way. And I just thought that I was, you know, very imaginative. It wasn't until he became very ill and started having terrible seizures, probably about 2 months after he came to live with us, that in an effort to try and help him, because the vets had no idea what was wrong, I sought out the help of an animal communicator that a friend told me, you know, you might want to try this. I'd never heard of it before. And so when I spoke with her on his behalf, my goal as a homeopath was to find the aura, the symptoms to his aura, so I could hopefully find a remedy that could help our little pig, because the vet said he wasn't going to live out the month. His seizures were so bad. And after she was done telling me the symptoms that Clover was telling her he was getting right before a seizure would come on, there was time left over in our consult, and she started repeating a lot of these things that had been the little conversations back and forth that I had been having with Clover that I thought were my imagination. And I was just absolutely stunned, because I was very much the skeptic going into this, but anything I could do to help our piggy was, I would try. And finally, she asked me if I was still on the phone, because I'd been quiet with my jaw on the floor for about 5 minutes. And I said, yes, I was, and asked her, how can you possibly know these things? And I told her what had been happening to me, and basically she gave animal communication a name. She told me what had been happening to me and gave me a few tips on how I could hone my skills. And within a year, I had to start, you know, I went public and had to start charging people because there were so many calls coming in, I couldn't, you know, take to my other duties.
Well, it's interesting that you you say it took you about a year to develop your skills. I think all of us would love to be able to talk to animals. I think that, you know, growing up and watching animal movies or TV shows like Mr. Ed, which was something I certainly grew up with, it brought a longing into the lives of the children that watched those shows to have those same kinds of experiences with animals. And to a certain degree, we all do communicate with animals, don't we?
Absolutely. And it really didn't take me a year to hone my skills. It took me a year to get the nerve to go public. The skills are very easy once you realize how animal communication works and what to look for and recognize it as such. I believe that, you know, you can pick it up very quickly. And then just the more you do it, the better you get at it because you're practicing.
You've done something quite interesting with the work that you do, and I think it's very unique in that you're not just speaking to animals who are here with us right now, who are still alive. You have quite a unique and rare ability to communicate with animals who've crossed over. How did you begin to do that work?
That was purely accidental. I had this happen to me on one consult with a call that had come in from California one day for a woman who had lost her dog and was really upset and wanted to talk. And it was just a spontaneous thing. As I was in the consultation, and actually I was preparing for it beforehand, and then when I was in it, I was realizing I was picking up on this dog, and he was just as happy as could be and didn't want to come home. And I was thinking to myself, oh my gosh, how do I tell this woman her lost dog doesn't want to come home? And it wasn't until I actually, you know, started being, you know, bringing this information out to her that she said, oh, I completely understand. When she had called and asked to talk to me because she had lost her dog, I thought he was lost in the neighborhood. But actually, he had just crossed over. So that made perfect sense to her, and I was really embarrassed for having not realized that. But I also was stunned at the same time because this was the very first time I had had an animal come through from the other side.
Oh, I would have been stunned as well. In fact, your book, Crossing the Rainbow Bridge, Animal Journeys to Heaven, eventuated out of all of these communications, and it seemed that it must have happened very quickly that you noticed a recurring theme emerging through the clients that you were speaking with about animal afterlife.
Yes. I always myself grew up believing that, you know, when we cross over and lose our bodies, that we go on, that that's not the end. I've always believed in an afterlife for people, and I just always believed that animals would be a part of that. But when the animals from crossing especially, you know, started when because those situations happened over a five-year span. It took me about 5 years to write the book as well. I started to realize that this isn't just me, and it's not just dogs and cats. It's goats, it's horses, it's pigs, it's llamas and cows. And it was a wonderful confirmation to me. And the messages that the animals had for their people who were left behind and grieving so were so uplifting and enlightening, and they made me cry almost every time, but not out of the sadness out of it, losing them, but out of the beauty of what they had to say, that I will tell anybody who comes my way, death is not a final door that you go through and that's it. Life keeps on going, and animals have just taught me that if you look at life in the way they do, that death is just merely one more step on a long journey. I find that my life not only has been changed, but the lives of my clients whose animals have had messages like this has been changed forever, too.
You can't help be changed by some of these messages, Colleen. They are so profound. And I think that they're more profound than many messages I've read from humans. You know, it's just the level of high consciousness that these messages contain is mind-blowing. And it must be an awfully huge privilege for you to bring these messages through. How was it the very first time a message like this came through for you?
Well, the very first one was from the little lost dog, who really wasn't lost in the neighborhood. He was on the other side. His name is Sheldon.
Yes.
And so because I was stunned, I didn't quite know what to ask or how to probe or to even think about the possibilities that stood before me. So it kind of evolved, you know, gracefully and gradually. I think the animals took a lot of patience with me when they realized they were working with such a novice in that field at the time. But as the stories started to unfold, and especially when I had the opportunity to realize something big was coming, and I had time to get to the computer to get it all down, I started to realize there was more detail would come out, and the messages were even bigger than I could have ever possibly imagined. And I just can't say enough about the wisdom of the animals. It is so far-reaching. It's definitely far more far-reaching than my mind ever could have dreamed up.
Have you noticed an evolution in the way that the messages have come through? As you were a novice, did you notice that the messages weren't quite as developed back then as they are now?
Yes, and I think it's a lot of it has to do with the fact that I'm just a better communicator than I was back then. You know, I've had more years of practice, and not that the old saying, practice makes perfect, and I'm not perfect by any stretch of the imagination, but I've really honed my skill. And not only that, because of past experiences where I thought, oh, I wish I had asked that. You know, I try to remember those situations now and question animals in different ways when I can. The messages that will come through spontaneously, the ones that I had the opportunity to get to a computer to write down, those just came through, and they would come through so fast I never had the opportunity to ask them a question even. It's just the message was there, and as fast as I could type it was how it came down. So even though if I had gone back to think about it, by the time I was done, every question I would have thought of was already answered.
So tell me how it is that you perceive the messages from the animals. Is there a physical feeling that accompanies the message? It sounds like there must be.
There can be, yes, because animals communicate not only with mental images or pictures, as I call them, they also communicate with thought blocks, emotions, sensations in my body. And so I'm often feeling a lot of the things that the animals are sharing in their effort to get the message across, because animal communication, I believe, comes in on a level I call universal language, comprised of all those things I just mentioned. I'm the one that puts it into language. The very sad thing that I have found is that the English language is a pitiful form of communication, because there just are not enough words to go along with all of the information that comes through. What I do get down on paper, what I am able to verbalize to clients when I'm with them or on the phone, is really just a shadow of what's coming through.
Have you ever actually experienced pain through some of these communications that you've picked up from the animals?
No, I don't really experience. I mean, I will experience, they'll share with me the kind of pain it is, it's like it's there, I'm aware of it, I can describe it, I can describe where in my body it is, because I never did take an anatomy or physiology class on purpose, so I wouldn't have my mind getting in the way knowing that the liver is on the right. I'm still never sure if the liver on the right or the left, so I think that helps a lot, because it keeps my, you know, conscious brain out of the picture a lot. But I don't experience doubling over pain or, you know, searing pain or anything like that.
Yes. Well, I'd love to talk to you about the animals themselves now. I know that you've spoken to so many different species. You're not just talking to cats and dogs and horses and other animals that spend time with humans. You've spoken to bison, other wild animals. Would you tell us the different, you know, variety of species that you have communicated with, and what was the smallest animal?
Oh, the smallest animal probably would be a mouse.
And the largest?
The largest would be an elephant and a whale.
Oh, really? You have communicated with whales. That's fascinating. I had no idea. So let's hear about some of these communications.
Well, the mouse was kind of basic. People had a pet mouse and they wanted to know, was it all right? And that was really fun. Mice, hamsters, and the small animals that sometimes children first get as pets. They're very busy. I can tell you that they're very, very busy. In regards to the elephant and to the whale actually was almost like an accidental thing because I just kind of overheard them. I was in their presence. I didn't have the presence of mind to form specific questions. I was at SeaWorld in Florida, and they had found that morning somebody had snuck into the park or stayed in the park after hours, and it was somebody that the people had known, but he had messed around with some of the dolphins and the whales and then had actually drowned in one of the whale tanks. And when the workers came in that morning, one of the whales was holding his body up on the surface of the water. And where I would have thought that the whales would have been, you know, almost spiritual about it, they weren't. They were very annoyed that this person had dirtied their tank, and they just wanted him out of their tank. And I found out afterwards that this fellow who had succumbed by drowning in the tank was actually a person with some mental challenges, and he had been caught trying to do things before in the past to some of the animals, like the marine mammals in SeaWorld, and had been tossed out, you know, and stuff. So perhaps the whales remembered him, but...
Oh, I'm sure they did. Actually, that's something that I'd like to ask you about animals' memories. I think it's been established this far into the interview that animals definitely do have feelings and that they certainly think about things. But a lot of people have heard things about, you know, elephants having memories. What about other animals? Do they hold on to things from the past?
Absolutely. And one of the most wonderful things that I've come to realize is how animals feel about their mothers. They remember their mothers. They love their mothers. Some of them try to still communicate with their mothers even across distances. You know, when I was a little girl growing up, my dad told me that, you know, animals operated off instinct, and when, you know, they're separated, you know, they miss their families for a day, and then that's it. And I think my dad was actually just trying to, you know, quiet my own nerves because we had just brought home a puppy. But no, animals of all ages, horses, you know, 30 years old and older, have talked about their mothers with such great fondness. And that, to me, shows tremendous amount of memory because you're usually pulled from their moms too soon. And, you know, they can live a very long life, but they never forget their mothers.
It's interesting that you mentioned that they still try to communicate with their mothers even though they're physically separated. Do you know how it is that they're doing that? Is it a purely telepathic thing, or do you think it's more of a feeling thing?
I think it's a little of both. I believe animal communication is just telepathy, driven by both your intent to speak to an animal and your attention on them at the same time. And I find that animals communicate most prominently with me, and I believe across species, with these mental images that I had mentioned before, pictures. And so when an animal is thinking, you know, like of their mother, they're picturing them in their mind, and I think that that's all that is needed to really drive the link. And so they're able to connect, you know, at a distance that way. But I do think that the animal on the other end has to be in, you know, a receptive state at the time, whether they may be sleeping or just, you know, being quiet, for that link to be, you know, fully made on the other end.
Yes. Colleen Nicholson, we're going to take a quick break now for some music. You're listening to bbsradio.com. My name is Liz Miller, and you're tuned in to Otherwhere.
Thank you.
From King Street, out of New York, you've just been listening to the Frankie Feliciano Reconstruction Vocal Mix of Give It Up. It was from A Little Lewis and an EP entitled Rain, with those lovely, thick, deep beats and funkified bass. I think we are very happy with that release. We're definitely happy with that one, I think. It's not out till June 19, so check it out. You can find it on the net at kingstreetsound.com. They are proud supporters of Otherwear and put out some of the best records in the world. So check them out at kingstreetsound.com.
Downloading Otherwear.
We're back. You're listening to Otherwear with Colleen Nicholson, animal communicator, and myself, Liz Miller. Tell me a little bit about your work as a homeopath and how that's applied to your work with animals.
Homeopathy was my first trade, and I studied here in the United States, mostly by tape seminars, because you couldn't get to instruction back when I first started doing this because it was so hard to find and wasn't offered, but on the West Coast, and I'm on the East Coast in the United States. And when I do homeopathy now, it usually comes out within an animal communication session. I don't sit down and take cases anymore because I have so much communication work to do. So when I'm working with an animal in a communication and things are coming up, I'm basically just looking more at acute situations in my work now, and that's what I tend to respond to.
And how do the animals respond to the homeopathic treatments?
It depends on what's going on. Usually they respond really well, to acute situations. Of course, the goal is to always get the right remedy the first time, and so sometimes I'm a little torn because I'm supposed to be doing animal communication, but this health issue is coming up, and I just happen to know this remedy will work well. So I try and put it all together. But usually there's very good success in helping with acute situations, which is where homeopathy really can prove itself to the doubter.
I know that you have a very, very close relationship with the animals around you. Would you tell us a little bit about your family life at home and who you share your home with?
Oh, well, certainly. I share my home now with my husband. We have two daughters. One is living on her own, and the other one is getting married next month, so she will be out on her own as well. And other than that, we have four little birds and three beloved potbelly pigs. A house of the three little pigs.
Potbelly pigs are from Vietnam, aren't they?
Correct, yeah.
And I hear that they are absolutely fascinating animals to be around, very, very loving, very intelligent, in fact, more intelligent than dogs. And through your communications with pigs, you've learned quite a lot about them and about their history with this earth and us humans, haven't you?
Yes, I have.
Would you please share some of that information with us?
Well, there was one of the potbelly pigs that I work with, who is a client of mine. His name is Higgins, and originally he was in Florida when I first met Higgins. Now he's since moved up here to New York near me. But his people wanted to know one time if Higgins, because they realized he was very wise, could tell them the history of potbelly pigs. And so this was something I had the opportunity to do and just sit down and, do it by email so I would be able to type it out for them, because Higgins needed to think about it, he said. And when he finally was ready for me to take dictation, the history of potbelly pigs turned out to be so much more far-reaching than I had ever dreamed could possibly be. It wasn't about how they come from Vietnam and, their temperature is 101 to 103 naturally and things like that. It was about where pigs came from in general is spirit, and it just blew me away. He talked about how pigs were first put here on this planet, and then people were put on the planet, and how they used to mingle together, and how man drew apart as he became more civilized, so to speak, and was and shunned pigs, and it just went on, and it was the most astounding thing I had ever come across at that point in stage, because this was probably about 10 years ago, so not very long after I had started doing animal communication. It was truly astounding. And that was actually my very first opportunity to speak with animals on a higher level like that, where they had taken it to a whole different realm.
Do the animals take it to a different realm very often in your consultations?
Not very often, because their people aren't usually looking for that. They're looking to just better connect with the animal they love at home, and they want to understand them and know them better and things like that. So unless they're asking questions that perpetuate that kind of thing, it doesn't often come out. I think it's there lurking under the surface, but it doesn't always just, erupt spontaneously like that.
What was the most surprising thing an animal has ever said to you?
I'm almost it's a little risque.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Well, that makes it even more intriguing.
Okay. Well, it was a client who, her and her husband were, they have a couple of horses, and they had a Dalmatian dog named Bogart. And my client, who was the mom, had been having trouble with her back. She, had three ruptured discs in her neck and was really in a lot of pain. She's a nurse and had tried to lift a patient that without help that was too heavy because the patient needed her too, and so she really injured herself and it was inoperable, and she had been really suffering for a while. And Bogart just happened to mention that Dad was getting upset because he was needing some romance and she wasn't able to. She wasn't supplying. after that, I had learned that Bogart had been banned from the bedroom at certain times. They felt like they had been exposed.
And, I'd love to talk to you some more about the communications that you have with the animals who've already crossed over. Obviously, that's been a large part of your work. How long was it before you realized that there was this recurring theme in the messages from the animals where they were actually talking about the afterlife and the fact that they had gone on and were in this new place?
Well, I realized it right away when the messages started coming, because they were very clear about, what they were telling me. And because I had always believed myself that there was an afterlife, it wasn't a stretch for me to, get to believe this part. So I just really was taking it all in. So that was really very clear right up front for me that they go on. And that not only do they go on, they stay around us as well. And, my clients found that very comforting as well.
How many different variety of animals have you spoken with?
Oh, my gosh. I've never counted. There are so many. From mouse to elephant to whales, I've talked with possums and guinea pigs, reptiles, tortoises, just a whole range, including everything on the farm. It's just always amazing what kind of animal I'll find is a companion for somebody. That's probably the more amazing, from groundhogs to snakes, iguanas. I have a client with iguanas, and like 5.5 foot long iguanas, which is pretty interesting.
And you don't have to actually be physically next to the animals when you communicate with them, do you? You can be anywhere?
Yes, that's true. 98% of my work is done by telephone, and I communicate with animals all over the world. So distance is not an issue with animal communication. And again, I believe it's because it's telepathy. So it's driven by our intent to speak to them and our attention on them at the same time.
Yes.
When I'm on the phone with my client, they know their animal. They know what their animal looks like. So I don't even need a picture of them, because my link is actually driven some through them, through the person.
Oh, that's really, really interesting.
And the people don't need to be with their animals either. One of my most, fun conversations I ever had was from my home in Clay, New York, which is right in the middle of New York State, with a woman in Saudi Arabia who was an American. Her husband went there for work, and I not only spoke with her horses in Saudi Arabia that they had brought over with them, but also we spoke with one of her horses who hated it there so much they had sent him back home to Arizona. So that was truly a worldwide conversation that day.
Have you ever wondered about the science behind your abilities, and have you ever tried, or have you ever been interested in wanting to know about how what you're doing is happening, and try and make sense of it for you through taking up any studies of physics or metaphysics or anything like that?
No, I never have, because it's so real and it proves itself time and again. Every day I'm getting confirmation of things I couldn't possibly know. That I, you know, for me that was enough. I find it really amazing when they do the studies with the psychics, the double-blind studies,
yes,
and things like that. And I think that that's truly, you know, exciting, especially when it proves accurate, you know. But I haven't ever, you know, either been in a study myself or really looked to see how that would go about. It's only been probably in the last 5 or 6 years that animal communication in the United States has started to become more popular and recognized for what it is and more of a household term. So I think they just haven't caught up with it. What I would find really amazing, and one thing I have a really big interest in, would be in how animal communication could help in forensics. I've worked on a few criminal cases, and it was really startling, but you need to have, you know, the give and take of free flow of information so that I would get confirmation, so I know, am I getting this accurate? Do I need to question in a different way? But I think that's a whole untapped field, because animals are at crime scenes all the time.
Oh, that is just incredible. Yeah, I don't think very many people in the world have ever even thought about that potentiality, and it's a huge source of information, isn't it? That's totally untapped.
Yeah, absolutely.
Could you tell me a bit about the work that you've done with animals in forensics? Have you got a specific story that you might be able to share with us?
Sure. I have a story from, which probably was organized crime. It happened in New Jersey. It involved the murder of two dogs, man, and a friend of that man, while the wife and daughter were out of the house, and the wife called and requested the communication afterwards, where I knew nothing, just that there had been a death in the family, and that was all I knew. And the dogs, who were witnesses to the crime and were actually hiding when they were found, they were hiding upstairs, were able to not only tell us what they saw, you know, where the man came in, described them, described the woman who was waiting outside, how they had seen them go by in a car 3 or 4 days before, described the car, described the crime scene, described where the bodies were found, who was shot first, that they were rifling through papers and, you know, throwing them all over. And these were all things that after I was done with the communication, she was able to go back in and verify for me. And so that was exciting in one hand, but frightening for me in another, because that was only one state away, you know, and that was a little too close to home for me, considering what, this was my first really venture into being asked to work on a criminal case, and that was still an open and pending murder case.
Have you continued to do that work?
A little bit. Basically, people just don't know about it, so they don't think to ask, I believe. So, but I would be more than willing, because I think it does open up a huge possibility of helping, you know, solve some of these crimes, especially ones where they run into dead ends and they don't know where else to go.
Oh, yeah. It would be an amazing bridge for the chasm of, you know, just lost information that disappears from us and gets deposited in the animal kingdom. It would just be wonderful if you could continue to do this. And I have to ask you, have you had any communications with animals that have actually done any predictive work with you?
Yes. Well, weather predictions.
Really?
We have this on the website right now, as a matter of fact, holisticanimal.com. And if you go, there is a tab there for animal weather predictions. And last year was the first time I had done it, because I had you know, the light bulb went off one day while I was talking with a horse out of Florida who had routinely been predicting hurricanes for us for 3 or 4 or 5 years before that. And I never stopped to think that, geez, maybe the animals, you know, have something here and we should track this. So I went in and I put up the animal weather prediction page, and we had, I think we had 10 animals on there that had predictions last year, and we had 8.5 hits. So I thought that was an astounding response. I mean,
well, if anybody, if you or if anybody else had ever thought, oh, all of this stuff is just coming out of her subconscious, or it's her imagination, she's just making this all up. I think when you bring in, you know, skills like helping out with forensics and predicting weather patterns, and I know of actually one other researcher who checks the lost and found classifieds in the newspapers to see how many cats and dogs have disappeared, because he's worked out that that helps him identify when there's an earthquake coming.
Yes, I've heard of that. In California, they do that a lot.
Yeah.
I think it's amazing. And, I mean, when you have horses, and I actually have a dog current now in the Jacksonville, Florida area predicting for this year, and a little pig down there as well, potbelly pig. But when you have horses and dogs and potbelly pigs predicting what's going to come, where it's going to come, you know, months in advance sometimes, I think that that's really a wonderful tool some weather forecasters could use, because I don't know if you have it where you are in Australia or in other places in the world, but our weathercasters here, I would love to get paid that much money to be wrong that often. They just, you know, it's going to be a sunny day, and you look out, and it's already raining. You know, where are they? How did they miss that? So the animals really seem to have, you know, a great ability to be in tune with the weather and weather patterns. And it makes sense, because it's a survival necessity.
Yeah, that's certainly all the proof I think I need to accept this completely as a reality. I've never really had a problem with believing that animals can communicate, because, as I said earlier, I think we all communicate with animals, and anybody who's lived with an animal understands their, you know, their habits, their wants, their desires, because they look at you in certain ways, or they make sounds that you begin to understand. You know, you build up this library in your head of all the different sounds that they can make, and you just know after a while which one means what, which look means what thing, and they are such amazing friends to us. They give us so much love. You don't need to be able to speak to them with words to understand that they're communicating that to you. So, I just think, you know, when you were talking before about the animals making predictions, I had this image flash in front of my mind's eye of, you know, towns being dotted by these little oracle animal temples. You know, you just pay $5 and go in and have the local oracle, the local furry oracle say something that you need to learn.
Wouldn't that be wonderful? You walk inside and there's a horse there waiting to talk to you.
That is really one of my ideas of heaven on earth.
Yes.
So, let's talk about animals and the afterlife, because this is a huge subject, and you're one of the few people on earth who can share something this profound with the rest of us. What has been for you the most special message that has come from the other side to you?
I can't answer that, because they all are so special and so unique in so many ways that, you know, one just supersedes the next. And you know, whether the bison on Yellowstone to Sonny the elephant from Popcorn Park Zoo in New Jersey, or, you know, the little pig Duchess, who felt when she left that she had been here originally with a great purpose. They just compound on one another. So I can't pick out a best one, because they're all a part of the whole, I think.
Well, I would love you to share the story of Sonny's message with the audience, if you could.
Sonny was an Asian elephant out of Popcorn Park Zoo. He had been rescued many times, not rescued many times, he had been moved around from zoo to zoo after having been poached out of Zimbabwe when he was just a calf and had seen his mother and his herd slaughtered before his eyes. He and a few others had been poached from there and sold to, you know, zoos in America. And he was an escape artist. He was always breaking out of where he was. He was very unruly and very hard to control. And anyway, he wound up at Popcorn Park Zoo, which is part of the Associated Humane Societies in the New Jersey area. And they, at the zoo, they have rescued or abandoned exotic and wild animals, and they were thrilled to be able to give Sonny a home. And when Sonny went to Popcorn Park Zoo, from the time he got off the trailer until the time he died, John Bergman, who is the zoo director there, him and Sonny were, you know, best of buddies. John moved his desk into the elephant barn so that when Sonny was in the barn, John would be nearby, because he realized Sonny wanted, you know, like being close, even though his behavior in the past hadn't always really proved that. And I was really disappointed to find out that before I was ever able to make it to Popcorn Park Zoo to meet some of the animals I had talked with, that Sonny had crossed over, because I was looking forward to meeting him in person. And they asked me if there was anything I could tell them about him once he had, you know, reached the other side. And it took about 3 weeks for his communication to come through. But when it did, it was just unbelievable, and it was aimed right at John Bergman, the zoo director, who had been his friend. It reached proportions that not only had I never, you know, been to before with another animal, but it just proved the unbelievable innate intelligence and wisdom that elephants especially have to offer. So if you want, I'm trying to find it in the computer here. I could probably pull it up for you and give you a sample of what Sonny had to say.
Oh, that would be wonderful.
Okay, I have it. So this was a message from Sonny the elephant, not only to people in general, but especially to his handler and his good friend, John Bergman, director of the zoo at Popcorn Park in Forked River, New Jersey. You are the only continuity in life that I have ever known. A single, solitary statement given 1 week before the rest of Sonny's message was to come through. From that, I knew that the rest was going to be surreal. And when it resumed about a week later, just upon me waking up in the morning, I realized Sonny was there and was ready to give me the rest of what he had to say, so I ran to the computer, and this was what I put down via him. You gave me a time in life, a place to be, comfort as best you could, and a method of routine with which to live. You also gave me friendship, the kind no other human had ever truly offered. When I first saw you, I knew that you would not leave me alone. I knew that the truths you saw in my young eyes were horrors that you'd hope to erase. Each tear that ever rolled down my cheek was a tear that you helped me whisk away forever. You gave me your heart, your compassion, your understanding. You gave me your soul, and I am saddened for your despair at my departure. Coming to you was the best experience life could ever give me this time around. I knew when I left my mother that the home I had known had just been erased forever. Although many tried to give me a kind place to live throughout my life afterwards, my existence with you was the closest I had ever come to herd. The place that you gave me was a good place to learn, and much learning was done by all who crossed our path. In giving me stability that reflected organization and routine, I saw a method with which to occupy my days and move forward with living. The day I left my mother's side, everything that is me had been numbed. I did not want to go on. I did not want to stay in a world surrounded by those humans who'd taken me away. Did you know that I did not even get to touch my mother's trunk? Did you know that I did not have her bones to give me comfort? I believe you have always known the real truth about me, Sonny. I believe you must be part elephant, too. Leaking from the heart is not such a bad way to leave. Although I do not know why this happened to me, I do believe that it was a kinder crossing than my mother's. When she left me, it was in fear and desperation. When I left you, it was in the most magnificent of ways. When I left you, I took with me your comfort, your caring, your unending devotion, and your love. And I held my trunk skyward so that my mother would see me and help me to find my way. When I left you, she was there. And I will tell you now, John, that not one second of my transition was spent alone. I will tell you now, John, that I was happy to go home. In the years we have lived with each other as heard, I have learned that not all people looked at me with sadness. Some looked at me with great awe, knowing that inside I was a beast of great burden and a being of great truth. Of this I would like to be remembered. The work we have done can be a model to your world. Chronicled and recorded, it can show that the light of an elephant is a great tribulation for Earth. From the largest being to the smallest, there is a purpose and a meaning for each. From the smallest to the largest, there is a right for each to exist. Each being comes to Earth with a purpose before him. Each being is a reflection of a greater truth. Sadly, many humans must have forgotten. The life of an elephant in your world holds triumph and tragedy. For many, they are blessed with either one or the other. I would like to be remembered by humans as an elephant who lived with both. My life was filled with three blessings, John. My first blessing was my mother and herd. My last blessing was me returning to them. I would like my life with you to be recognized as my middle blessing. It is the one which I had enjoyed for a fairly long time, and it is the one which helped erase the torn edges of the tragedies I had known. You, more than any other, helped me to realize that some humans are kind. You, more than any other, showed me that respect is the key to the kingdom of triumphant joy. Without it, there is little reason to walk that earth. Without respect for all beings, there is no hope for mankind. Thank you for giving me the respect I deserve. Thank you for taking one look into my eye and realizing that a being of great worth was inside, frightened and alone. Thank you for bringing every human to my side that offered me respect, help, and undying love. These are all gifts that you have given to me. These are gifts I leave with you too. I do believe that each human who ever saw me with you knew that you held me in special regard. For those who did not understand why, thank you for helping them to realize that their lives lacked these gifts of respect and true love. I say this because I know that seeing an elephant is a hard thing to forget, and perhaps now they will be encouraged to find these gifts within themselves. In truth, this is the first place to start looking, and once found, can then be given to another. Try not to be sad when you look at my empty space beside your desk. Rather be joyous with the tremendous place this elephant takes within your heart. And if another like me comes to you in need, find him in the blessings birth bestowed upon him, and help him to realize that they have not been lost forever. The worst thing we can ever do is to lose ourselves in the world, finding oneself without a herd. A herd can be just two, though, and I have learned that we do not always have to look like each other. The greatest memorial to me that you can give is that of my story to the world. Help others learn that we are all connected in life, and the tears you shed as you speak will not fall hard upon your face, because I will be by your side, lifting my trunk to wipe your horrors away as you once did mine. And hear my trumpeting in the wind, for this is where I now reside. You will greet me again one day, John, and I will lift my head and trunk to the sky so that you can find your way home, as I did. When you are ready, be not afraid to leave, because life on earth is fleeting, death is a momentary illusion, and love travels freely between both worlds. It is an enduring bond of unbreakable strength, and a bond that gives each the ability to go on. My picture with you shows this truth. Thank you. Sunny, your friend.
Oh, my goodness. It's... How is it for you to read those words back? They're so deep. They touch you in places that, you know, until you have heard that message, you have never been touched in that way.
I know. And every time I read it, just like the other, the animals' messages in crossing too, every time there's some, I find something new. I'm touched in a different way, and a tear will fall from my, you know, from my eyes for a different reason. The messages are multi-level, and they just continue to astound me every time I read them. Even in the writing of Crossings, I mean, it went through probably at least 72 editings, and we'd still have to take tissue breaks. We could only get through a few stories at a time. And I would remark to my friend and editor, Kathy, at the time that, you know, gosh, I hadn't thought of it this way before. And we kept saying it. And then we realized after a while, but wait a minute, we've said that about this story four times now. And it was always for a different reason. So the multi-levels that the animals' messages encompass is astounding to me.
It is absolutely astounding. I know that you're in the New York area, so can I ask you about 9/11? Was there anybody who was involved in that tragedy who contacted you later to communicate with their animal? Or
yes, actually, Popcorn Park Zoo again, because they had given vests, working dogs, you know, the canines, working
yes.
canines. And one of the canines, the only animal to die in the collapse of the World Trade Center, was Sirius, one of the dogs that they had given his vest to, who was working that day. I also spoke with a dog close by to me here, physically. He's in it, like 2 pounds over. And he actually showed us 9/11 3 weeks before it happened, and I couldn't fathom. I thought it was the worst communication I had ever done. Nothing made sense to me. I didn't understand what I was seeing until the morning the towers collapsed and I saw the people running out of the debris clouds all gray and the people falling from the buildings before the towers came down. And so that was a really amazing event to have had happened, in a horrible realization once I realized 3 weeks later what that communication had really been all about.
Was and there, sorry to interrupt, was there ever a time when you had wished that you had acted on that vision, that if there had been some way for you to have understood better what that was all about?
I didn't. As I look back on it, and his mom, this dog's mom too, Dewey, we didn't know how it would have come about. You know, we knew that there was a plane involved because Dewey was afraid of his dad flying,
a
trip was being planned for a few months in the future. And so we thought it would just be a plane crash. I didn't see towers coming down or even that it was New York or anything. He just didn't know why he kept seeing people falling from the sky, the gray people, he said, the gray people. And I knew that he wasn't talking about, like, aliens or spooks even, because I couldn't see through them. And I didn't understand. I had no clue as to what this could possibly be. So I would have just thought it was a plane crash. There wasn't enough specific information in what he was seeing and experiencing to have pinpointed where it was and who ever could have imagined what actually happened during 9/11 on that awful day.
When we come back from the break, would you share one of those communications with us, Colleen?
Sure, absolutely.
Thank you. We'll be back very, very soon. Again, some more music for you all. This is Otherwhere on bbsradio.com. And my name is Liz Miller. Our guest is animal communicator from New York, Colleen Nicholson. You can find her on the web at holisticanimal.com. And her book is Crossing the Rainbow Bridge, Animal Journeys to Heaven. When we return, we're going to find out some more about some of the communications that Colleen has brought through. She'll be sharing some more of those with us. And we're also going to find out about a very specific communication that Colleen brought through from my cat, Eartha. That's all coming up very, very soon.
I'm
Released on Prescription Records, you've just been listening to a track from an EP entitled The Gift, and it was called Be My. And that is dedicated to all of the animal lovers out there in the Otherwhere audience, which probably means about 100% of you. So thank you so much for loving and caring and respecting the animals that we share our lives with. I'm sure all of you out there could relate to those lyrics. Now let's get back to our interview with Colleen Nicholson.
Colleen, would you please share with us some of that information from the World Trade Center tragedy?
Absolutely. I think probably the one I would like to share, because it so touched me at the time, was in working with Canine Sirius, which was the only dog to die in 9/11 when the towers collapsed. He was a bomb dog, and his officer, Officer Lim, and him were on duty when the planes first hit the towers, and the Port Authority's offices were in the basement. I can't remember if it was Tower 1 or 2, but one of them, and Officer Lim thought that it had been a bomb, so he put Canine Sirius in his crate and told him to wait because he didn't know, you know, what he was headed for, and he thought that it was something different than what it really was. So anyway, he left, and actually Officer Lim was in the tower when it collapsed. He was one of the handful of people who actually got out after the buildings came down, the only survivors ever to come out of the World Trade Center. When Popcorn Park Zoo called me and asked me if I could speak with Canine Sirius at all, his body still hadn't been found. Of course, you all remember that it took months for them to clear the site of the World Trade Center. But Sirius did come through, and this was a message, too, that was for his partner and friend, Officer Lim, although I did not know Officer Lim at all, and I don't know if he ever received this message from the Associated Humane Society. But Sirius had to say this. I stayed as you asked. I did not bark or act wild. I listened as I should. Then I helped, as was my job. The day in question, we all met our Savior while doing what we did best. I helped many from our building after it fell and had sent me through the light. Did you know that angels are more than just for people? Did you know our work still carries on? Although you were there in your world, I worked hard in mine, shouting, get out, get out, come this way. I took many away. On my fourth trip out, I was given a plan. One more, then my job would be done. Past the priest on the walkway, I too was carried beyond after my work was done there. I did not have to stay and help anymore. The angels told me my work was done for now and that you would be all right. I saw you in the stairwell. I heard you cry with joy at the breaking light as you left. You were my last trip out, but I know you did not see me. We walked with angels who carried us both. The sadness I first felt as you were carried away, and I saw like an ambulance of some kind, was confusing to me. In a world of enlightenment and joy, I did not want to bear seeing you go. But like the others with me that day, the angels told us it was time for us to leave, to go that way, to follow them, that all would be well in time, like after any unforeseen event that first leaves you frightened or confused, but then leads way to understanding. They let me leave past the horses, leading crowds into the right direction, away from the buildings of despair. The horses, although working, cried a horrible sound. I tried to tell them not to be afraid, that they were that we were not frightened, just doing our jobs and now leaving with our guides, but they did not hear me. They heard their partners, their friends, the ones who they trusted beyond fear, you know, that which makes them stronger, their belief in what they do and who they do it with. I passed the dogs who were on their way to the scene. They came in many cars and were assembled in cities far away. My angels took me past five or six of them before heralding me home to where I am now. Those dogs came in hope of doing good work. I told each one as I passed them by not to be afraid and not to be dismayed, to help their people, their partners, the most, because they would need their help more than the pile. And it's interesting, Liz, I'll just interrupt for a second, that was the second time an animal had referred to the World Trade Center as a pile. I met your dad and grandpa on my way back home. One whisked in to be by your side. The other waited in case you were to follow me. I told him, no, you were not coming. I came in your place. I do not want you to fear my few moments spent without you that day. I stayed in my place. I patiently awaited your return, but the angels came for me first, and I am glad. I will wait for you by the river of your dreams. The next time you see me, it will not be to work, but to rest and relax and reflect on all we once did. We worked well. We did a good job. We helped many. Do not cry for me in your sleep. Do not cry for those who did not make it home that fateful day. They are here with me now, in my new world, our true home, and each one of us will greet you when you are meant to come. I hope you will always know that I will be the first in line to kiss your hands. Do not be dismayed at our departure or sad at what the arrival of a new partner may mean to you. Our time there is always a finite expression of who we truly are, and that we only get to stay there for a while. Be joyous that we were brought together, had time to work and play, and help so many on our journey. Our life and job together is not over, just this moment is on our long journey through life. Angels await you too. Please know that I am one of them now. You will never be alone. I am still by your side. That was Sirius. Sirius's body was found on January 22nd of 2002. Actually, on the 21st, he was recovered in his kennel. And from all accounts, he had been killed instantly when the towers collapsed. And one of the most heartfelt things that I had that day when I was watching it on the news was that all of the heavy equipment and everything was silenced. And his kennel was draped with a flag when he was brought out, just like every other human that they had found in the rubble of the World Trade Center.
Oh, that's beautiful. It's so good to hear that they honored him in that way.
Yeah.
And what an amazing personality and soul that he had. And that's the thing, isn't it? These animals just have so much love, and the insight that we gain into how they're reacting to things and how they're perceiving things on the other side, or, you know, from inside their little bodies. It's just so comforting, I think, for the people who are left behind, isn't it? These messages provide so much strength and support for the people during their grieving processes.
Absolutely, and that's why Crossing came into existence. My clients, you know, I had had so many of these, you know, kinds of things come through in just my everyday working with animals who were either getting ready to cross over, who had just done so, or had survived a traumatic event, and these messages coming through for their people helped them so much in their own grief and in their own road back to living after losing a beloved animal, that they just kept insisting, I had to tell people, I had to write this down and let people know. And I fought it for a long time because I really honestly didn't think I had the writing abilities to do their messages justice. And although the messages in Crossing, you know, all the things in quotes are from the animals directly, the things that I got, I had to build, you know, the stories around it. And I was really worried that I would do an injustice. I felt so honored and touched that they had shared this kind of information through me to their people. I felt that that was a big responsibility to, you know, bring their word out into the world in a way that would honor them as much as they honored me by sharing it with me in the first place. I'm really just thrilled and awestruck and indebted and grateful to the animals for letting me do this for a living, you know, to get their word out. And I really strive every day to be a good vehicle in channel almost for their information, you know, to get it right and to make sure that I'm interpreting their messages, you know, correctly for their people, because they're messages of love in every instance. They're messages of love, and I don't want to get anything wrong.
Their perspective on death, too, is extraordinary. I think that the way that they talk about death, in that it's a momentary illusion, it's a very transitory thing that doesn't seem to affect them in any way. They don't describe going through pain or fear.
That's true. It seems like if animals do go through any, you know, moment of fear, that it is. It's just instantaneous, and then they are on the other side. And what I've really found heartening for me, and something that makes me a little less worried about my own transition one day, is that animals have shown me on a daily basis, as soon as they drop the physical body, as soon as that connection is severed with the body, they no longer are subjected to the lesser emotions. I've never once had an animal from the other side give me, share with me a feeling of sadness, fear, grief, anger, hunger, pain. All, it's like they don't exist in the world they're in now, and that right there is very comforting to me. It seems like those are things that are left for us here, which makes me believe that they are operating at a higher vibratory rate in that place that, you know, most of us call heaven. So,
tell me about the pictures that you see when they're sending you pictures.
Oh, they're really detailed and just beautiful. Sometimes it can be a little cloudy, and I have to ask an animal if they can, you know, if I'm not interpreting it quite right, I ask them if they can please make their picture more clear. Usually they're able to do so. But animals are like people, you know. Some are better storytellers than others. And, so the pictures are in color, you know. They're vivid. They can show me the finest detail. One of my favorites is, you know, I'll ask an animal what color they are. And I swear to God, they pick the one hair on their body that's a different color. So, yeah, I mean, they can be all brown with one white hair, and they'll show me that white hair. And I think it's because that helps differentiate them from others. So I'm always a little embarrassed when I think that they may be brown. One classic example is Lollipop, a potbelly pig, who was in Florida. And when I first talked with Lollipop, she told me she was a white pig. And that wasn't true. She had about 6 white hairs in her forehead, right in a spot, and the rest of her was all black. But Lollipop had been rescued from a family of, from a black family. And so those 6 white hairs from that white spot on her head, you know, really differentiated her
yes.
from others of color. So in my mind, you know, to start with, I thought for sure Lollipop was a white potbelly pig, but she really wasn't.
Can we talk about the different levels of consciousness that you've been able to perceive from the different animals? You mentioned earlier that the mouse and yourself had a pretty simple conversation. Are there different levels of consciousness where you can actually really feel that one animal has got a greater level of intelligence or is more evolved than another animal?
I don't know if I would call it greater intelligence or even more evolved. I'm not quite. I know what you're talking about, but I'm not quite sure.
Maybe it's just a complexity.
Differentiated as such. You know, I find that there's definitely different species look at the world in a different way, which is why I like to do communications. You know, like with Popcorn Park Zoo, and I teach there as well, so that my students can see how different species look at the same situation in different ways.
Yes.
I do find that there's definitely a difference between warm-blooded animals and cold-blooded animals. Reptiles, you know, cold-blooded animals seem to be more primitive. They almost feel more primitive. They're slower. They're kind of in the moment. A lot of animals are in the moment, but this is usually in the moment in a survival way.
Yeah.
They're slower to respond to stimuli. And this would be aside from, like, tortoises. I love tortoises, and, you know, they can grow to be so old, and I know that they have tremendous wisdom there. But with tortoises, I find it takes a really long time for them to get a sentence out. You get a couple of words, and then about 10 minutes later, maybe another one or two will come along. So I've never had that kind of time on the phone, you know, in a consult,
yes.
to really have a good conversation with a tortoise.
And who do you think are the funniest animals?
Oh, again, that's, you know, they can have such humor. There was a potbelly pig in Florida who, you know, they lived next door. The guy that lived next door had some chickens and a rooster. And by the way, animals do swear sometimes.
Really?
Yeah. You know, whether they hear it from us or I'm just interpreting, you know, those symbols is a swear word. I don't know. But that potbelly pig in general couldn't wait for that, you know, gosh darn rooster to get over here. He wanted him to ride on his back. And I thought, well, that's a really odd thing. And then the pig showed me that the fence post that he used to rub his butt on, you know, the top of his rump, had tipped over. He had knocked it over. So he had nothing to rub the top of his butt on. So he wanted that rooster to come over and get on his back. And I think he was back scratch. But I have animals who will fib sometimes, but it's almost always in good humor.
Yeah.
I don't find animals really lying. Sometimes they will want to avoid the truth by blaming who just sprayed on the, you know, dining room wall on somebody else other than themselves. But usually they give themselves away by, you know, throwing out saying, well, it was Barney, it wasn't me. So it's really kind of amazing. They can have a great sense of humor. And actually, they don't even have to be ones associated with us. Two of the funniest things I've ever heard, I just happened to overhear. So a human wasn't involved at all. One was my potbelly pig Clover was outdoors grazing in the side of the yard, and I was in the kitchen doing some dishes, and I looked up just in time to see a squirrel try and jump from the neighbor's tree to the tree in our yard.
Yes.
Missed. And he fell down, and he bounced off their garage roof, and he bounced off the trunk of the tree, and he hit the pile of leaves on the ground, and then he took off running. And Clover never looked up, never missed a beat, and I swear he said, just as plain as could be, well, now that was stupid. And he just went on grazing, and, you know, I'm thinking, oh, my gosh, the poor squirrel, was he hurt? You know, so I wasn't thinking of a humorous thing in the moment. So, and another was we live on the river, part of the inland waterway up here, and in the winter, the river freezes over, but it usually doesn't freeze all the way over because there's a current running through it. And we get a lot of ducks and geese in the winter that come, and they stay, and we feed them, and one year, there's a lot of neighborhood cats here. One of the neighbors isn't very good and just lets their cats, you know, populate the world. So there was one of the cats down on the ice, right on the edge of the ice, and he was stalking the ducks. And I was walking through. I didn't see this. I was walking through and was headed upstairs with an armful of laundry, and I happened to notice the kitty there. And my thought was, that cat's going to fall in the river and have a very cold bath and awakening. But just as I was hitting the stairs, I swear I heard two of these ducks say the equivalent of, here, kitty, kitty, kitty. And I stopped in my tracks, and I look out the window, and there are two ducks. There's a flock of them in the middle, and there's two going along the side. And they would get really close, and the cat would start to reach, and then they'd pull out a little, and then they'd go up. I watched them do this for at least 200 yards. But those ducks were definitely enticing that cat to jump in that cold water. I was sure that the cat was not going to have duck for dinner. That was one thing.
Oh, look, they've got to keep themselves entertained somehow.
Yes.
What is typically the most rewarding information that you bring through from the animals to your clients?
The ones that my clients can verify, things that I couldn't possibly ever know, because that is the most welcome and wonderful gift to them, because it's proof to them that not only am I really hearing them, but that their animals really are listening to them and understand and are paying attention and are sharing their lives with them, even though they had never had words between them, so to speak, before me. So giving their animals a voice is really the most rewarding thing I get in my daily life. I am so appreciative to be able to spend my days this way.
And I know that you probably go to zoos every now and then. How are your impressions of the animals in the zoos?
I haven't actually. I've only been to one zoo since I've, you know, taken the big step into animal communication. And I found that the animals actually were in far better stead than I had expected, because most of them had been born in captivity. They never knew anything different. unlike Sunny the elephant, who had, you know, been born in the wild and remembered some of it, the animals knew how to tune us out, tune people out. And I think, if anything, they just would be frustrated. I think natural instinct wanted them to be able to roam farther, you know, travel further, and, you know, the confines of their enclosures kept them from doing that.
So, how do you feel about zoos in general then?
Well, it's interesting because right now, today, we have a local zoo here, and one of the elephants has been in labor for 3 days, and they just did surgery today, and she lost her calf, and now I'm hoping they won't lose her as well. They don't know what went wrong, and, you know, and I'm not going to assume that I know anything, but it just seems to me that animals don't have the space that they need.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, our elephants here hardly, you know, they don't really have much room at all. And elephants in the wild walk tremendous distances. And what a way to stay in shape, you know, for something like childbirth, to be able to get that baby out. If you don't have good, strong muscles, you can't possibly push as well.
It's so true.
I don't know if that has, I don't know if that has anything to do with what happened here. But, I mean, the baby was determined, was moving 4 days ago. And it just, that's what it bothers me the most, is to see the animals. On the other hand, I think zoos hold a really important place in the breeding programs, you know, for animals that are looking at extinction and, you know, helping to repopulate the wild. So I really give a lot of credit to ones like the San Diego Zoo and the ones where they are trying to, you know, bring, like, some of the animals from Africa here, get them going again and put them back into the wild and have them survive.
Well, I'd love to talk to you now about some of those tips and techniques that people may be able to employ out there if they would like to enhance their own communication with the animals in their lives. What is the very first step that people should take when they want to learn how to communicate more deeply with the animals around them?
I think the first step is to look themselves in the mirror and say to themselves, I can talk to animals. I believe, Liz, that everybody can do what I do. I am nobody special. I'm just somebody who remembers how and has honed a skill. That's all. So I have also found that doubting yourself, if I start to doubt that this is really happening to me, it just will shut right down. And I swear it's the animal saying, oh, for God's sake, you know, she's not listening again. So they just turn it off. So the first thing to relearning to hear and to hone your skills is to not doubt yourself and to know that you can do this. If you have a functioning brain that's working at, you know, normal capacity levels, you should be able to do this. The first thing you would want to do, too, is to realize how animals do communicate, and that is through mental images or pictures, feelings, sensations. So the pictures are very, very subtle. They're so subtle, they're easy to miss or to think that they're your imagination. They're no different than how you know what Eartha looks like, even though she may not be in the room right now. Just that picture that you get in your mind, it can be very subtle. And it is really good for a lot of people to try and quiet their mind down. As you can tell, you know, I have a busy mind. I talk a little fast sometimes because there's so much information wanting to come through. I'm trying to get it out. But, we have busy minds. We usually, humans, have 3, 4, 5 things on our mind at the same time, which can do 2 things. One, it can keep us from really hearing and perceiving when animals are trying to communicate with us. And 2, it can keep us from, or it can keep our pictures very muddled so the animals don't understand what we are trying to tell them when we do try to communicate with them. Because every time we form a thought, we've already formed a picture in our mind to go with it. We can't help it. That's the way our brains work. But it's those pictures that animals, I find, communicate most often with, especially across species. So if you're trying to ask an animal to do something and you've got a few other things on your mind at the same time, your picture will get very cloudy. So I always say, talk out loud to your animal. Really try to create like tunnel vision and focus just on that one thing you're trying to communicate with them, because your picture will be more clear. And the more detailed you make your sentences, the more detailed your picture will become. And it will just become second nature in time. When I first started communicating, and didn't realize what was happening to me. The animal communicator who was talking to our pig Clover suggested that I get a notebook and start writing down things. And that really worked really great for me because I found that, sure, sometimes the grocery list was in there, but most often, if I wrote down the very first thing that came to my mind after asking an animal a question, I found over a week's period of time of just doing this, even 5 minutes a day, that there were patterns. I was starting to see patterns in the responses of the things that I had written down. The grocery list wasn't in there very often by week two or three. I was learning to train my own mind to pay attention, really. And that's something that can be very hard for us humans because we like to multitask, but animals don't. So if animals realize that you really are trying to communicate, I find that they really are very happy to tell you what's on their mind.
Have you ever formally trained people in animal communication yourself?
Yes, I have. I have two seminars planned this year, as a matter of fact. I haven't done them in a couple of years because, you know, schedules didn't permit it. But it's really a rewarding thing to be able to see a group of people come together who don't think that they can do this and have 99% of them walk out with verifiable, you know, experiences of their own by the end of the day. It's really enlightening and heartening and a joyful thing. But, you know, one of the things that always meant so much to me, especially in years past, not as much now, but is getting confirmation. I think it's because it just helped me realize that I wasn't losing my mind. So, okay, I couldn't have known that. And these people are saying that makes sense. So, but with babies, you know, nobody talks baby really anymore. But I do feel like I've had a link. And as a matter of fact, I just had a communication with a client who is like a visiting nurse, so to speak. I don't quite know what they would call that in the state of Texas, but one of her clients is a baby who had been brutally, you know, molested by his father, by her father, and is in a coma. And it actually felt like I was making a link with this baby who was very happy and did not want to acknowledge her physical body or anything like that. And it really made a lot of sense to me, but it made even more sense to her nurse here, my client, to know that what they were seeing in the symptoms that this little child was putting out was not at all what I was getting. And that was the first time I had spoken with somebody in a coma.
I'm surprised, in fact, that you could even establish that connection because, from my understandings, when people are in a coma, it can be very, very difficult to find a connection to that particular soul unless it's wanted, you know, unless the connection has also been wanted to be established by the other person. So that's a really amazing story. Thank you for sharing that.
Well, there was actually like an older woman with this child, like a guardian watching over her.
Mm.
I see this a lot with animals who have crossed over who aren't awake yet on the other side for whatever reason. And I don't know if this information really came to me from this child or this guardian. I could see this little child playing just as happy as could be and would not acknowledge me at all.
Hmm.
Not at all.
So, sorry, Colleen. I'm just quickly going to look over my questions because we've only got a couple of minutes left and I want to make sure I ask you the most important ones I have. I do want to talk to you a little bit about those human people that you see on the other side when the animals first cross over. They take the form of guides, and we hear of the same kind of arrangement happening for human souls when they cross over, especially if people are disoriented or if they die suddenly. There always seems to be somebody there on the other side to guide them through the process and to help them feel not so alone. And that's the same with animals.
Yes, it is. Sometimes when animals have been really ill for a while, or in suffering, or they've had a traumatic crossing, I find when they get to the other side, it's like they tend to sleep for a little bit. And it could be a few minutes, a few hours, a few days, a few weeks. I don't think I've had one more than really 3 weeks or a month where they were sleeping. And in each case, there's been a guardian of some kind. Usually it's an animal of the same species, but sometimes it's been like a Native American. I saw once with a herd of horses who died in a barn fire. That was one of the criminal cases that I had done. And I can see the animal, and the guardian is like there, is a protector, or somebody watching over. It's a very loving experience, and it's very, very quiet and respectful feeling. And nothing will be said. The guardian will not communicate with me. And, you know, after the first couple of times that happened, I realized this is a great time of respect. And so I don't ask anything now. But, and then when the animal wakes up, it's boom, there they are on the other side. And it's almost like they're healing still or resting after a long struggle when that first happens. And sometimes animals who do have a traumatic crossing or something don't sleep. You know, I never know what ones will and what ones won't or how long they might sleep for. But it seems like it's a very restful, peaceful, healing kind of sleep that they have. I'm only assuming humans do the same thing.
Have all of the animals that you've communicated with on the other side been around other humans? Or have there been animals that have been in places where there are no humans present?
The animals that I've communicated with usually know of humans, but don't necessarily live with them. The wild bison that I had communicated with in Yellowstone National Forest, they're wild, you know. There are people there that try to, you know, protect them, but they do not get up close to them, and, you know, they let them be as free and wild as they possibly can be. They only have to try and herd them sometimes. And I also spoke with one that's actually in crossing, which was a wild dog, like a coyote, who had... The only thing I ever heard him utter in, and it was just as he was getting ready to cross over because he'd been hit by a car, and the people stopped and they're trying to care for him and get a vet to the scene. And I heard him say, as we were passing by, "People are touching me." And it was the most incredible experience. You know, he had spent his life being frightened of humans, and here people were being kind and touching him. And he wasn't afraid. He was really touched on the deepest level. And I thought, what a beautiful way for this wild animal to leave.
No, that's really, really beautiful. It strikes me as an experience that maybe the soul of that coyote really needed to have, so that if that soul decided to reincarnate and take on another physical body, maybe another animal body, perhaps it would be a dog this time, or another canine, or even a horse, or a cat that was even closer to humans, because some of that fear had been alleviated in that last life and through that last experience. What do you think about that?
Yeah, that's exactly what I thought, Liz. I thought that very same thing, that maybe next time around he'd be closer to people.
I've been taught, and it's something that I... Through my life, I've questioned again and again, because with all metaphysical teachings, you can't really bring them into your life as your truth until you live them. And with animals, it's a little bit difficult, because what I'm trying to get at here is that I was taught that animals, or that souls in general, go through the different kingdoms that we all can experience here on Earth, from mineral to plant to animal to human, and that the journey throughout those kingdoms is progressive, that there are no backward steps, that there are only forward steps, and that as animals get closer and closer to being human and making that jump from the animal kingdom to the human kingdom, that they individuate as souls, that instead of having the consciousness of the group so much, they begin to integrate an awareness of their own unique identity and personality. And of course, by living with us, and we anthropomorphize their behaviors so much anyway, they lose their fear of humans, and that eventually they do, through the animal kingdom, go into situations where they're living with humans and bonding with humans and deeply falling in love with humans, just as we are with them. Have you thought about those sorts of ideas much in your life and through your work?
Yeah, every day. I'm always wondering. I haven't had any animals say that they were going to, like, come back as a human or something like that. They always seem to stick to the same species, but maybe, like, I had a house cat one time that said he was going to come back as a wild cat, a bigger, more powerful kind of cat. So it, actually, in that instance, he would have been taking a step away from humans.
Mm.
But because they're within that mass consciousness, so to speak, I don't know if that really would have made a difference for him. That maybe he just at that time wanted to experience a big, powerful body like a bobcat would have. And I've had other animals like want to come back within the same kind of species, but it's like a step up in evolution almost, but in the same line. So in you know, I don't have a lot of experience with, you know, vast majorities of different kinds of species in talking about if they're going to come back when they do, because most of the time animals say they will not come back in our lifetime, because people are always asking, will you come back to me, you know, and they're so sad and their heart is broken. But usually they tell me that they won't, and it appears to be for the simple reason that time here is very different than time on the other side. A whole lifetime here is just the blink of an eye there. And they've only just gotten there. They're not planning on leaving, you know, because they've had the hard life here, and now they're looking forward to some rest and relaxation on the other side and journeying forward over there before we've had the opportunity to live out the rest of our lives. But I do have animals that talk about coming back all the time. So far, I haven't had one say they want to be a human, and I find that very enlightening.
I do too, actually.
Why take a step down?
And I must ask you a question or two about farm animals, especially ones who know that they are going to be slaughtered and eaten. There are a couple of questions I'd like to ask you. The first one is, do animals know when they come into this existence that that will be the way that they end up sometimes?
In my experience, I believe a lot of times, yes. I don't believe that they necessarily know that while they're here, but animals tell me all the time that they pick their experiences, just like I believe we do, before they come back.
So it's from a higher soul perspective, really, that awareness is going on. It's not when they're here in 3D so much, is it?
Yes, I believe so. Just like when we were born, I believe that we live many, 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 many lives, but yet I don't remember them. I think once I get back to the other side, that memory will come back. But if we were to have all that knowledge while we're here, I think it would hinder our growth, and that's what we're here for, is to learn and experience and to grow.
It's hard enough to stay in the present as it is.
Yeah, I know it.
Let alone having to battle, you know, memories of your past lives.
Right, right. I haven't hypnotized an animal yet to see if we can do some past life. Sometimes they remember, you know, bits and pieces, and sometimes they'll remember being with their people before in other lifetimes. Usually it's only one or two lifetimes they may bring forward. And then there are other animals who just haven't a clue, you know. So just like people, some are a little more aware than others.
And so what is their attitude generally if they know that they're going to be eaten, or at least, if they don't know when they're here, how do you think they deal with that whole situation, and do you eat meat yourself? That's a question
I'd really
love to know.
I'm horrified to tell you this, but yes, I do eat some meat. I try not to. I when I buy it in the store, I bless and thank each animal that is in that, you know, packet, and it's a hard thing, but I've tried to be vegetarian, and I just don't seem to be able to manage it. I just get not well. I'm just not well.
Mm.
So, but I do believe that animals do know, and as a matter of fact, the current animal quote on our website, because we have animal quotes as well, is from Oliver, a bull in Popcorn Park Zoo, and this was something he had to say, and I've got to read this to you. He said, I am a bull, a steer that won't ever breed. I live here now because I will never taste good to people. who I think should consider eating themselves for a while. What else could it do?
That's great advice from a bull.
Absolutely. And, you know, when this came out of Oliver, I sent it off to the zoo, and they sent me back the reply of Oliver's story. And what it was that he was rescued by a woman who was writing a story on life at a dairy farm. She paid $160, or 90 cents a pound, for newborn Oliver because he was a boy, he was being raised for veal. And not only did he not, even at that very young age, understand exactly what some people had in mind for him, he realizes that being at Popcorn Park Zoo, he's only expected to be happy. So I think that really kind of said a lot, and I did eat beef for a while.
Yes.
It is a hard thing to still eat meat sometimes, knowing that I can talk to these animals, but it's a quandary, you know. People are omnivores, and I'm very bad at being a vegetarian, but it seems to be a dietary need. I just need protein in a way that I can't seem to muster from beans.
Yeah, I think everybody's different, and that some people just feel a lot better and a lot more grounded when they have meat in their lives.
Yeah.
And as long as people are being conscious about where that meat is being raised and how it is being raised, how good a quality that animal may have had while it was alive, these are all considerations that I think are very important these days. And on that tip, I wanted to quickly ask you, have you ever spoken with a diseased animal? There's been so much talk of, mad cow disease, et cetera, and how that's moving into our food chain. Do you have any insight that you can give us on that?
No, I haven't. I haven't spoken with any animals who were diseased in that kind of way. I've wondered if perhaps in my own experiences what may come into fruition for me first might be avian flu, which they're very worried about here, entering the United States and stuff, because we feed the ducks and the geese in the winter, and I know that probably this winter coming they'll be mandating that nobody feed the wild, birds at all because of avian flu, but so far I haven't had any experiences with that.
I know that in certain kosher butchers, well, actually in all kosher butchers, a very special prayer is said over the animal before it's slaughtered, and that this prayer is supposedly meant to render the animal, not able to feel any more pain. And I was wondering if you had any insight on that.
I don't, but I can tell you that animals like Sonny the elephant, who saw his mother slaughtered before his eyes, was scarred for life, even though he never was touched in a harmful way, apparently, because he had no scars on his body, to indicate such. And I know that in slaughterhouses in America, babies are routinely slaughtered before their mother's eyes in the beef industry especially. And it's horrifying. It's absolutely horrifying to me. This kind of practice can go on.
I know that people generally in those industries don't think that those animals have feelings or can think at all. But that, to me, is appalling to hear that, that there is that much of a lack of sensitivity.
Absolutely. And what frightens me, one of the things that I really hope that I will accomplish in my life as an animal communicator, is that I might open up the minds of just one person even to realize that animals really are living, breathing, thinking, sentient beings. They do have feelings. They have life plans. Because if I can help one person understand that, then perhaps they'll look at an animal in a different way and never raise a hand to one again or allow such atrocities to happen. Because I think, people who work in these slaughterhouses, I can't fathom the kind of mindset they must have to be able to endure working there. I know that they have a high turnover rate of personnel, but just to be able to walk through the door to begin with boggles my mind. And if I can help one person understand that, and if they can look at an animal in a different way, maybe they'll look at each other in a different way, too.
Very, very, very wise words. Before I let you go, I'd love to ask you a couple of quick questions about our consultation with Eartha, because I think that some of that information that you brought through was really mind-blowing, and it was certainly unlike any other information from any other animal that I'd heard. So let's quickly talk about our session with my cat, Eartha.
Okay, now keep in mind, I really don't remember much of it.
Yep, that's okay. I wanted to specifically ask you about some of the questions that I asked her about her cosmology. And at the time, you said, I don't think I've ever had a conversation like this with any other animal, because she showed you a picture that you had never really seen before. It was when I asked you about Eartha's history, and she went into a little bit about her own creation story.
Yeah.
And you told me about an image that she was showing you of a blue void with a backstream of light energy. And can you pick it up from there? I don't know. Can you remember the rest?
I guess I can. She showed me these little bright lights. You know, they look like sparkles on a dark background, a dark blue background. And each of these little sparkles is a being, is soul. And it was coming toward me. And behind it was like this flash of light following it. And that flash of light was actually knowledge. And it was like knowledge of the species, so that each of those little bright lights had their own flash of light coming towards them, and that those flashes of light all came from the same source. So all of these little beings, no matter where they went in this great big blue, you know, deep blue expanse, whether they came perhaps here to Earth or to another planetary system or something, they all had knowledge from the same source that followed them wherever they went. And that was really amazing to me.
Well,
I've never seen anything like that.
Well, yeah, and she also communicated to you that all of the cats around the Earth can use this backstream of information and connection to actually connect with each other, and they all have an awareness of each other, no matter where they are.
Yep, that's true. That's what I remember her saying that, and it's amazing to me. But the picture that she showed me helped me better understand how that could be, because even though all those sparkles were individual, that backstream of light had all come from one main source, and it just followed each of those little sparkles wherever they went.
Well, it was amazing validation for me to hear you report that from her, because the reason why I asked the question was that a while ago, one of my favorite books, a book called Earth, funnily enough, by Barbara Marciniak, mentions in one of the chapters that cats arrived here on Earth from a different system, and it is near the stars Sirius and Sirius B and C, and that triple star system has planets that revolve around it that are inhabited by beings who look like us, except that their faces look like cats. And that they are genetic, well, they are the genetic source for cats here on Earth. And so their genetic information has been implanted or seeded here onto this planet from those beings. And Eartha, in fact, and without me saying this to you, Eartha communicated that her beginnings were, it felt like she was cast out of this place by these beings. And when you said that, I just sort of had to take a breath, and it was a really amazing confirmation. And I honestly didn't know what I would get back when I asked that question. Tell me about your cosmology, Eartha.
No, and once again, I was thinking, oh, you know, this is what cats like, and, you know, I never expected that either.
and in terms of validation, there were so many things that came out of that session that were so helpful, that was brand new information that completely backed up what I had intuited, and certainly helped with the treatments. And I must say to everybody, thank you all to your prayers, because I know that they've helped immensely with Eartha's recovery, considering that just a couple of weeks ago, She was very close to death, and I truly believed that there was a good chance we might have to put her down. Now is really very much on the road to recovery. All of the swelling has disappeared. There was an awful smell inside her mouth where she had abscesses and tumours growing. It's disappeared. And Colleen, I just can't thank you enough for the advice that you were able to provide about her treatments, because I was asking you, should I do this? Should I do that? Does she like this? Is that good for her? And Eartha was able to tell you exactly what was working, what wasn't working. And in one case, I asked you about her crystal essence. She told me that one of the rocks was actually missing from the combination I was using. And that, to me, was stunning. I don't know if you remember that. She said one of the blue stones.
Yes.
And it took me a little while to remember which blue stone she might have been referring to, but as soon as I worked it out, she was absolutely right. It was a piece of aquamarine, and that little piece of aquamarine in the combination indicated in the stone sentence that the problem was in her mouth. So the combination I'd been using was right, but it really wasn't targeting the area where it was needed, which was her mouth. And so, you know, that was just incredible. Thank you so much again.
Oh, thank you. It was really Eartha. We need to thank her.
Yes, actually we do. We need to thank her. Would you please tell people again how they might find you on the internet?
Yes, you can go to holisticanimal.com. There's no S on the end of animals. That will take you somewhere else, and I believe it's a place in Australia, but that's not us. So holisticanimal.com, and you can also find information on Crossing the Rainbow Bridge, Animal Journeys to Heaven, on our website there. So please stop by. It's a great website, and it's always changing, and there's always new tidbits and information from animals on the wise things they have to say and their weather predictions for 2006.
And could you tell me if you're planning on writing a new book?
Yes, I am, actually. I have a number of them in stewing in my mind. The next one, due off the computer, will be Pigs of Great Fortune. So it is the first one is actually on how to make a pig food for potbelly pigs, the power of food, feed them for health, love them for life. There will actually be a sequel coming out for Crossing at one point in time, but it won't really be like Crossing is now with all the stories and things like that. It will be really kind of a practical thing. You know, when Crossing came out, a lot of people then called in and wanted to speak with their animals on the other side, so I have a lot more experience since I wrote it than I did beforehand. And what I thought the next book, the sequel, would be all of the questions that people keep asking me, you know, the answers to those, and a lot of the things that animals keep repeating time and again, you know, from different species, the same messages coming through. I thought that I would address those in the next book.
I've got a suggestion as well, so I'm going to put my hand up and say that I would really love it if you wrote a book one day and actually spoke to more animals about their cosmologies and about their stellar origins and see what they have to say, because I think that could be a fascinating compilation of information that would give all of us who love them so much some insight that no one else can really provide.
I think that's a great idea, you know, from Higgins and the history of potbelly pigs to Eartha and the cosmology of cats.
Yeah.
Be a great start, isn't it?
It sure is.
I have to tell you that one of my sister's horses, who is actually a police horse, Sonny, he crossed over a few years ago, but while he was still here, I remember him mentioning to us at one point in time, and I know I must have it in writing somewhere because I used to like to jot these things down. Sonny was very wise. He had talked about how horses came here in light bodies first from another solar system.
Oh, and that is so wild.
The Pleiades. And that's why people believed there were winged horses, because they were in their light bodies. But as they got heavier, the wings, or the way we perceive them as having wings, went away. And I thought that was pretty incredible.
Wow. I love that so much. That is incredible.
And, you know, always after the fact, when I go back and I actually sit and think about what they just said, I'm like, well, that makes so much sense. You know? Never thought of that before. So,
Oh, that's right. Before you go, would you leave us, please, with a little bit of Potbelly Pig wisdom?
Potbelly Pig wisdom? Oh, my goodness. It's such a vast thing. I don't even know where to start. I'm completely speechless. And that seems, you know, bizarre because I'm never speechless.
Can you find something quickly for us?
Can I find something quickly for you? Oh, gosh. My files aren't that organized. Hold on one second. And let me flip through here.
And, you know, and thank you, too. Thank you, by the
way. Oh, you're welcome. Thank you. Potbelly pigs are, like, my favorite. And
well, I'd actually like to help inspire some more people out there to consider getting them as pets. I know that as soon as I can find somewhere big enough, with a big enough yard and lots of fresh air, I would definitely love to have a Potbelly pig in my life, and that is completely because of you.
Oh, well, that's great.
They just sound like real, just amazing animals to be around.
They are. They really are, and I can tell you that I love talking to Potbelly pigs, and I love talking to horses, simply because I've yet to meet one who didn't have a whole lot to say of either species. I have something here from a pig who crossed over, just a little brief thing from a
Potbelly
pig.
Sure. That would be wonderful.
This is from Willie, a beloved Potbelly pig who died, I believe he was about 17 years old, and he had to say to his mom after he had left, "You have always been there for me, whether I was learning house rules, like where to potty, or how soft a bite or a root I was able to make on your toes. You have whispered my name in your heart, where I know it became X. You gave me friends, respect, and honor. The last two I will take with me. But the love you shared is my guiding light that shines on the new path I'm soon to journey upon. I will take you all with me in my heart, and I will leave my love for you behind. I love you, but the great boar is calling me. I think I hear my mother, too."
Oh, that is so beautiful. The great boar is calling me.
Yes.
So there's a hierarchy in pigdom.
Yes, there is. It seems that way to me.
Wow, the spiritual hierarchy of pigs, the cosmology of cats, and on and on it goes. Colleen Nicholson, you are such a treasure and light for this world, and not only for humans, but especially for animals. Thank you so much for your incredible work and your wonderful sharing with us today.
And thank you so much for having me on your show. It's really wonderful for the kind of things that you believe in and find interesting that you're putting it out there for others, like me, who have always been so starved to hear things like this in the past. It's a great vehicle. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
What an enlightening and fascinating interview. And what a beautiful lady Colleen Nicholson is. It's going to be wonderful to keep tabs on what she's doing over the next couple of years, because I am really looking forward to seeing those new books. And I hope that you've enjoyed the show. It's time for us to go. Can you hear? Oh, yes, that's me flapping my wrist. I've run over time again, so I must depart. And unfortunately, because I've been so terribly naughty, oh, ow.
I'm not going to have time to do the relaxation. However, I've got a very special treat for you, and this is for everybody out there who owns a cat. This is a recording of one of my cats, Dizzy. It was only from a couple of hours ago, and he was sitting on my lap, very, very contented and happy while I was doing some editing. So I decided to get my microphone and record him. There is a lot of research out there that backs up what I'm about to claim, and that is that the sound of cats' purrs are deeply therapeutic and very, very relaxing. And anyone who's spent time listening to cats and enjoying them purr on them has probably noticed what a healing effect that it has. I hope you have a wonderful week. It's been my delight to present the show once again, and I hope that you join me again next week. If you'd like to find out more, then please go to bbsradio.com and check out the link that says Otherwhere. You'll find it on the right-hand side of the page, and if you scroll down each week to the show schedules, you'll find show info. Click on that next to Otherwhere on the Saturday timetable, and you'll be able to find out who's on this week. Next week on the show, we're going to be talking to a mover and shaker of monumental proportions. Her name is Ellen Hawakaya. She does a lot of stuff, and right now she is working on creating a summit that will be taking place in 2008 about Indigo Kids. More about that next week. You don't want to miss that show. In the meantime, many blessings to you all. Enjoy the full moon, and I'll see you again when Otherwhere returns.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blog and service.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.